Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, crafting kitchens that encourage connection and creativity. Details at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Anything that's been around for 120 years needs some extra loving care. That often takes specialized tools and technical expertise along with time. And what each of those requires to get the job done well enough to help that 120-year-old thing last another century or more is money. St. Alphonsus Liguori Catholic Church, also known as Rock Church, has come into some of that. As one of just 30 recipients of grants from the National Trust for Historic Preservation through its African American Cultural Heritage Action Fund, the predominantly Black church in Midtown St. Louis will be able to restore some of its intricate stained glass windows. Joining us to talk about what this funding will do for St. Alphonsus Liguori, which has seen more than its share of disasters since it was built in the late 1860s, and what restoration means to its surrounding community, we welcome Reverend Rodney Olive, acting pastor of St. Alphonsus Liguori The Rock Catholic Church. Hello to you, Father.
Good morning.
And we also have longtime parishioner Monica Huddleston. So happy to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Welcome to both of you to the show. Now, before we go any further, I must ask, why is St. Alphonsus Liguori Catholic Church known as The Rock? Monica.
That's an easy one. Surrounding our church from the front all the way to the back and the sides is a beautiful hand-built stone fence, if you will. And so the gentleman who did that work way back when nicknamed the church The Rock because it was surrounded by the stone rock fence.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. How high is this fence?
About 8 feet, maybe?
Oh, wow.
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. That's a lot of rocks.
And see, we had to repair part of it, and as soon as I started repairing part of it, the historical people came and said, "You have to put it back exactly the way it was."
Oh, and what was the reason for that?
It is a historic.
The wall itself is a historic monument.
So you could not touch it without. Without incurring some attention and doing it in a particular way.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, and that goes to the special expertise that was noted in the introduction.
Yeah.
Now, it also seems that St. Alphonsus Liguori could also have an alternative nickname, stained glass.
Yeah.
And there are, after all, 54 total stained glass windows at the church. Father Olive, can you talk with us about what those windows depict?
Well, the windows themselves are really priceless works of art. And they go through the whole Bible from before the birth of Christ, right through the birth of Christ, and throughout the story of Christ's life.
And how big are these windows, Monica?
About 22 feet.
22 feet.
22 feet or so. Tall and then wide, several feet.
Yeah, and these are original stained glass.
And this stained glass has a history. They were completed for a landmark St. Louis event. Tell us about that history, Monica.
Well, the 1904 World's Fair is when these windows were first introduced to the world, if you will, done by the Munich, Germany artists, Meyer, and they were introduced at that time. So they're over 120 some odd, 125 years old. The church itself, well over 150 years old.
And that history makes it very St. Louis. When I was reading about it, I was thinking about what kind of experiences people may have had looking at the stained glass for the first time. How is it, Father Olive, when you first came to the church and you've now been with St. Alphonsus Liguori Catholic Church for about six and a half years, what did you feel looking at them?
It It's a very majestic church because the stained glass, it just draws you in, and especially in terms of a spiritual presence in the church.
Yeah. Is there one in particular that your eye goes to again and again?
Well, there's about two or three, actually. There's one with the birth of Christ, which is just magnificent. It's just so well done, the details and everything. You know, there's another one with the crucifixion, which really makes you stop and look and meditate.
And Monica, for you?
Well, for me, there are so many, and they're all so beautiful. Some of them depict actual people in them. Others are just colors and a burst of color. I guess the crucifixion one is the one that I gravitate to the most because of what it signifies in terms of Christ's sacrifice for us. And all of the windows are so beautiful, but the colors, the detail, just really special.
And have you noticed that when people come to the church for the first time, that there are certain windows that they stand a little bit longer in front of or below?
I think people are just in awe, period, of how beautiful the stained glass windows are. They walk around the church literally with their mouths open. In awe of the beauty of them.
Father Olive, yes?
And one of the things I find amazing is you get a lot of visitors to St. Louis, and I always ask, because they usually call me to open up the church for people, and I says, how did you hear about us? Oh, the taxi driver said, if you need to see a church, you got to go to the Rock.
Okay, so it has a reputation among those. Where is the farthest a person has come to see these? This is for either of you, Monica or Father Lee.
Overseas.
Yeah, overseas. For sure. I think as far west as Washington State, as far east as Nova Scotia.
Oh, up in Canada.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we have Europeans who have come. We have people from the African continent who have come. Yeah, it's pretty much universal.
So these windows, as we noted in the introduction, these are now over 120 years old. What sort of maintenance do windows of that age and of this type require?
Well, these windows, this is old school. Okay, let me put it that way. They were framed in lead because that was the technology of the time. And every pane is hand-painted. This isn't factory done. And so over time, and over 100 years, the lead itself starts to break down. And so that has to be redone. And the thing is, it can't just be redone by anybody. You have to have the people who know how to work with this type of stained glass. Because it's delicate work. And it takes a certain skill that I think there's only like two companies in the United States that know how to work on these kind of windows.
Well, and they were designed and built by Germans, right?
Back in the 1800s.
In the 1800s. One of the things that I'm thinking about with this many windows, and it's, I believe, 15 of them that will be restored.
As many as we can fit into the grant that was given to us.
Within that budget.
Plus some from the Rock Church Capital Campaign Fund as well.
But right.
We're hoping for at least that many.
Okay.
Maybe as many as 20-something.
Okay. So some crossed fingers and prayers maybe going up.
Yeah.
The building itself has endured a lot over time, and my colleague here at STLPR, Andrea Henderson, wrote about what the church building has gone through, and she noted many disasters that include wind and sun damage, harsh storms, environmental pollution, and also a five-alarm fire. Monica, of the two of you, you've been at the Rock Church the longest. Can you talk with us about that five-alarm fire and what caused it?
I can. That was in 2007. The male chorus, the men's choir, was practicing at the time. There was a storm, and lightning hit. Mm-hmm. And the way it hit, it was between the roof and the ceiling of the church that the rafters were burning, mm-hmm. and no one knew that. The choir kept singing. They didn't know what was going on. And then when flames start shooting out the ceiling or out the roof, everybody figured out then that the church roof was actually on fire, the ceiling. So it was a very disturbing time, as you can imagine. Different TV stations broke in and showed pictures of the flame shooting out. I jumped in my car. I lived 20 minutes away, and I couldn't drive fast enough to get there. And when I saw that the steeple was still standing, when I got close enough, I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. We still have a church. Mm-hmm. It was quite the scene,
What was the extent of the damage?
Well, the entire roof just about was gone. It was burned away for the most part. The interior of the church suffered more water damage and smoke damage than anything. Thankfully, none of the windows, the stained glass windows, were damaged. Mm-hmm. Thanks to our former fire chief, Sherman George, he gave the order to his firefighters, do not touch those stained glass windows. Mm-mm. And they did not. They were preserved.
Yeah. Father Only, yes, go ahead.
You know what I found fascinating? We have this, it's a huge circular stained glass window. And it was right face to face with the heat of that flame. Mm-hmm. And nothing happened to it.
What is depicted there?
That one is more just all different glass, you know.
A lot of mosaic designs.
Just designs, flowers. Right. Mm-hmm. Not people, per se, just designs. Mm-hmm. Beautiful window.
What other incidents have occurred in the time that you've been a parishioner? It's been 35 years, I believe.
Since 1990, yes.
What other disasters has the church endured?
Well, other than time and you know, the wind and things of that nature, that nothing as big as the fire, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
We have had a couple of renovations to the interior of the church because of plaster peeling and that kind of thing that had to be repaired. Mm-hmm. But the biggest disaster was the fire by far.
Father Olive, you came here just before the pandemic began. That obviously changed your experience of getting to know the parishioners, being in the building. But have you seen in the parishioners something of the rock, some kind of, you know, endurance or resilience?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, talk with us about that.
The resilience of the people is really rooted in the spiritual life of the church. You know, because I remember I was here maybe about 5 days when the pandemic hit nationwide.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And Father Steve, who was the pastor here, he just came to me. He said, the government just shut down the church. Mm-hmm. And so I told him, well, if we can't bring people to church, let's bring church to people. I told him, my background is in audio and video production.
Oh, is it now? Okay.
And so I said, let me put a team together and we'll live stream. Mm-hmm. And that was really a saving grace for the church.
It was indeed.
Yeah.
It was indeed.
Was there something about being in the church, you know, by yourself or just with a few other people, surrounded by that history, that has really informed kind of the way that you...
You could envision the people in the church, and you can feel the presence, as they say in African-American culture, you could feel the presence of the elders and the ancestors. Mm-hmm. And that's very real.
Yeah.
And that's just a figment of someone's imagination. You could feel the presence of those before us.
I think this is a very good place to take a break. We will take that short break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at jemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about St. Alphonsus Liguori Rock Catholic Church and restoration work that will be done on its iconic stained glass windows. That's thanks to a grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation through its African American Cultural Heritage Action Fund. We're talking with Acting Pastor Reverend Rodney Olive and longtime parishioner Monica Huddleston. Before the break, Father Olive, you were talking about what the space is like inside the church and how you feel ancestors. And one of the things that that I am curious about is what it means to be a predominantly African-American church. What does it mean? So in terms of the worship, for example.
Well, in terms of worship, it's important, I think, that listeners understand worship is about how we bring our culture and integrate that into our faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told a number of my younger missionaries, he says, well, what's it like? How long does Mass go? And I says, oh, our people don't go to Mass.
Oh.
They come to worship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's a whole different mindset. And I'm comfortable with that because that's how people in the Caribbean, they come dressed up and they plan to be there for a while.
Okay. Well, I mean, Mass literally means celebration, doesn't
yeah.
it? So it really is a celebration.
Yeah. It is always a celebration.
And
oh, yeah.
What are
always.
Some of the ways that, you know, worship or celebration happens at the church, Monica?
Well, at The Rock, we are blessed to have two gospel choirs led by Danny Dumain, music minister, and also music minister Malcolm Speed. Both of them are excellent at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the songs that both of the choirs sing are old Negro spirituals or based in other denominations, but they mean the same.
Mm-hmm.
They are worshiping the same God.
Right.
So the music itself is very African-American tradition-based and very spiritually moving that way,
mm-hmm.
as spirituals usually are, and as African American music always is.
Mm-hmm.
It really highlights the celebration of the Mass and the celebration of the Eucharist. We're all there to celebrate the Mass, to celebrate the Eucharist,
mm-hmm.
but it's in an African American tradition is what it is.
Is that what drew you to the church to begin with, Monica?
Indeed, indeed. I was having serious doubts about my faith back then.
Mm-hmm.
And a very good person who is now gone told me, check out The Rock before you make any other decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Just check out The Rock. So I showed up there on Martin Luther King Sunday, which was, of course, the weekend celebrating his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on from there.
Yeah.
There was no question that the Lord's presence was there. And the welcoming spirit of the ushers and the other people in the church was there. It's just a mainstay for our church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Eucharist at the Rock is something you come to experience. It's not something you do.
And the Eucharist is when you receive the communion.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
But it's a whole comprehensive physical and spiritual experience.
Absolutely.
Because that's what a lot of people today want. They want to experience God.
Mm-hmm.
They want to experience Christ. And, you know, in the African-American spiritual experience, those two come together and merge together.
Mm-hmm. So I've been to Korean masses.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very quiet, much of the time, very conservative. I mean, what is that experience like, Father Olive? You know, people may think of, you know, lining up to receive the Eucharist, mm-hmm. communion, and kind of going back
yeah.
quietly to reflect.
Well, our people do that.
Oh, yes.
But mm-hmm. it's in terms of how you bring people sometimes are free to express their emotions. Especially when you're preaching,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's all right, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're not familiar with that experience, it's going to throw you a little bit in the beginning. But, you know, you connect with people and people will express that, you know.
Right.
What is the makeup of the parish, Monica?
The parish is predominantly African American, but not 100% African American.
Mm-hmm.
We have white parishioners. We have Hispanic parishioners. We have Asian parishioners, and the visitors come from everywhere. We're very welcoming to everyone, regardless mm-hmm. of the predominant African-American makeup of the church.
Right.
We are God's people, yeah. and God's people are welcomed by and for everybody, and mm-hmm. the Rock is for everybody. Yeah. We mm-hmm. encourage everybody to come yeah. and See, feel that spirit.
And that's probably the most endearing quality of the parish. Because when you hear, oh, the Rock Church, oh, that's that black parish.
Oh, and right.
Say, well, wait till you come, because all of a sudden it's like multi-ethnic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And integration is part of the history of oh, yeah. this church, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
What is it about that that you think is important for people to understand?
It's important that people understand where we came from, you know, because, you know, this church evolved through the decades of segregation, whatnot, and to see the Rock what it was then and what it is now, people said this place should have closed a long time ago.
Mm.
You know, and you know, because you had the two different migrations out of the area. You know, when the economy started changing, a lot of your middle class people, they moved out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second migration out was in your middle-class black community.
Mm-hmm.
But then people came back.
And do you have young people there as well?
We're starting to.
Yeah. We do. We want more young people. Our church is predominantly older congregation. But when you don't have a school associated with your church, which mm-hmm. many Catholic churches do, it's harder to attract and retain young people. But we are about evangelization. We are mm-hmm. about welcoming young people into our faith and into our church specifically. So mm-hmm. we are looking at all of those avenues as to how to do more of that. Mm-hmm. But we do have young people.
Yeah.
Yes.
We started the conversation today talking about the stained glass and the restoration mm-hmm. grant. So what are the next steps in that? Monica?
Well, we have to select a vendor or a contractor, if you will, to do the stained glass work, because the grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation, from the Preserving Black Churches Fund, is funded by the Lilly Foundation, and we want to acknowledge that as well. That's mm-hmm. important. We're grateful for their generosity to us. That will be the first big part of our capital campaign projects, because we were blessed to get the $500,000 grant to do that work. But there's a lot of other work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
We had a study done in a couple of years ago in the summer by an engineering firm that assessed all of the buildings on the campus. So there's roof work in one of our buildings. There are old windows in other buildings that need to be replaced. There is HVAC stuff, mm-hmm. your boilers, your air conditioning units that are old. Tuck pointing, painting, plastering, all of these are things that are part of the capital campaign. It's a 5-year campaign which started within the last year, so we are hoping to raise $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So this grant gets us a good chunk of the way there, but our parishioners and our friends in the St. Louis area and beyond
right.
have to help us get the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had also mentioned each of you, the welcome to visitors that you put out. What is it that a visitor should expect? Or is there a time that you would suggest that people, if they're interested in looking at these windows, that they should come either to Mass or just to come and look at the windows, Father and leave?
Well, there's two ways someone can do that. If you're in the city visiting, you just come to the church office mm-hmm. and someone will bring you inside the church. You know, because we are an inner city church, and for security reasons, we don't leave the church open.
Open, okay.
But the best way to experience the Rock would be to come to one of our Sunday Masses.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 10 a.m.
Okay.
Every Sunday morning.
And be ready to be there for
maybe an hour and a half.
An hour and a half,
but
okay.
But you won't feel it. You right. will be so joyous and so spiritually involved that you won't even know that kind of time has passed. Mm-hmm. Guarantee you.
And as we wrap here, Monica, as someone who has lived in St. Louis for such a long time, what do you think that the restoration of these windows means for the surrounding community?
Well, the community can be satisfied that we're there and we're there for the duration. Mm-hmm. We want those windows and every other part of our buildings to last. And it's thanks to Shannon Horseman, by the way, who
yes.
did the writing of this grant. She mm-hmm. went after this grant for 4 years, and finally the fourth year we made it. Mm-hmm. So we want to thank her. She's ill today.
Yes,
otherwise,
shout
she
out
would
to
be
Shannon.
Here. Shout out to Shannon. She worked hard on that grant and got it over the finish line mm-hmm. for us. But our longevity, because of the service that we provide to the surrounding community, for our food pantry, our Narcotics Anonymous hosting that we do, mm-hmm. there are, and then the kids who come and are able to play basketball in the gym. There's all kinds of things that our church does for the community. And this capital campaign and its success, particularly this grant, mean that we're going to be there for the duration.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a
important.
Window into the future.
You got
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Monica Huddleston is a 35-year St. Alphonsus Liguori Catholic Church parishioner, and Reverend Rodney Olive is acting pastor of St. Alphonsus Liguori The Rock Catholic Church. Thank you both of us for talking with us today.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.